It was there as the survey team had indicated, draped onto the rocky floor of the canyon like the decaying corpse of a massive sea creature. My lamp shone on the ribs of the craft, and I could almost swear that the material appeared as bone, although my training would not allow me to believe that it could be anything other than some sort of unnatural metal, pitted and corroded. The front was a twisted ruin, and the yawning entrance into the belly of the craft beckoned my colleagues. The last I saw of them was the glimmer of their crystal lamps as they climbed through the shattered remains of the front of the wreck. Journal entry, Philippe Lesson, 1691. Welcome to Deep Wars. September 14th, 1690. The quest begins. Preparations for the expedition were excruciatingly slow for a year, as different factions within a number of kingdoms squabbled amongst themselves for the rights to any artifacts and treasures that would be recovered. All of these political machinations were restricted from the public, which was more consumed with avoiding the numerous plagues that seemed to perpetually afflict the cities. It was only when a convoy of ships carrying gold from the New World failed to return to port, and a subsequent fleet discovered the wreckage and remains of the crewmen, was there a quickening of the pace. It was rumored that the remains were found strewn about the fortress, a structure thought to be easily strong enough to withstand attack by the natives and their crude stone weapons. A few large lizard-like creatures were mentioned in reports, and I immediately knew that the accursed draconid creatures had finally taken the next step in their migration. I believed that some foolish commander had attempted to abscond with eggs from the nests of those deadly creatures, but had not realized how quickly the eggs would hatch, and the size and speed of the hatchlings. All my attempts at confirming my suspicions were rebuked by the impudent lords, and I was threatened with arrest for broaching the subject a second time. Had but a few of these creatures escaped into the humid jungles of the surfaced world, they would quickly grow and learn to conquer their surroundings, something we had discovered firsthand in our encounters with them in the underlands. While the leadership denied the significance of the loss of the ships and gold, within a few weeks, we had been fully funded and outfitted. Ours was a team of fortune seekers, a motley group of pirates, soldiers, and adventurers, all led by the few who had survived the first expedition. Into the darkness. The return trip was uneventful until our ancient submersible dove into the gloom to find the entrance to the underground sea. Wormwood narrowly avoided wrecking the craft on a massive wall of ice and finally found the entrance as our air supply was reaching a distressingly low level. We'd been safely encamped at the quay of a ruined city for 2 weeks now, having found a relatively safe area in this deadly land. The city itself has proven to hold magnificent treasures, but the sea has largely been unexplored, save for a few expeditions made with our salvaged undersea vessel. We initially believed that some of the race of elder beings living in this realm had migrated to the deeper zones, and the sunken citadels of crystal and gold was evidence for this theory. But it was not until some time later did we discover the extent of colonization that the ancients had achieved on the sea floor. Our first discovery was of massive structures on the bottom, all similar in architectural style to the pressurized sunken citadels we had previously found in the shallower waters, but abandoned and apparently flooded. Other sites we found in very shallow water near inlets and bays. These were more akin to the monolithic temples and pyramids we had found on shore, but must have been covered over by rising sea levels in ages past. There were also many ancient submersibles scattered on the bottom of the sea, most hulking wrecks, impossible to recover. We were fortunate that our own craft was functioning in proper order and could carry a small team down to the bottom of the sea quickly and easily to explore these wrecks. Our ship was designed in such a way that divers could exit and enter through sophisticated portals, connected to water-filled chambers that drained and repressurized before opening into the ship's interior. There were also numerous doors and walls that sealed off sections of the craft in case of flooding, an occurrence I unfortunately witnessed in person when our craft collided with some enormous creature of the deep. Wormwood's work on the diving suits has proven to be time well spent. The suits allow a person to drop to the sea floor, unfettered to any surface ship, while breathing air created from the surrounding water, not unlike how a fish survives in the deep. Wormwood had been able to interpret the elegant design of the salvaged suits and improve upon them, but he cautioned some of the mercenaries that their suits would need more work to be entirely trustworthy in the deep sea. Heedless of his warnings, the captain of the mercenaries took a small team to a deep bay where gold spilled from a wreck. Their dive proved to be a costly one for our team, but we gathered valuable information about the dangers of the underwater environment. The shallow shelf. Near the shore, the seafloor is relatively shallow, and the glow of ethereal light penetrates down to the bottom. The floor is generally hard bottom, with a layer of sediment, generally higher near river outflows from the underlands, that can slow progress during salvage expeditions, but is usually not dangerous. Most wrecks are visible and unburied, but encrusted with different plants, corals, and large shellfish, including some that are quite edible. The seas here teem with life. Schools of fish and cuttlefish abound, and predators roam at all times, some of fantastic size and appetites. We've lost a number of inexperienced divers to the deadly wildlife, and have had many maimed by gigantic barnacles that lurk on the bottom or on the sides of wrecks, waiting for an unwary diver to step or reach into their open maws. I have named them ankle biters in jest, although my humor has been lost on the crippled members of our team. The shallow shelf is a dangerous area to explore, but many wrecks can be found on the rocky bottom, and we've been successful in recovering valuable artifacts from the sunken hulks, including dive suits and lamps of gold and crystal. A number of these lamps contain a type of crystal I have not encountered before, one that emits a pure white light as opposed to the bluish or purple-tinted light from the other crystals. I have called these sun crystals because of the purity of the light and similarity to sunlight. These lamps have proven to be extremely valuable for exploring the deeper zones of the sea. The abyssal darkness. Beyond the shallow shelf, the seafloor drops off into a pit of blackness. With the intervening water column lit only by small phosphorant fish and the occasional glowing tube of translucent jelly, the darkness is almost tangible, like a mass of black ink, and monstrous creatures may appear suddenly from the gloom. A terrifying sight that has caused some members of the team to panic and mishandle the pressure and ballast controls of their suits. These poor souls shoot to the surface and are dragged onto our boats in apparent safety, only to convulse horribly and die screaming, with blood froth spewing from their mouths, or with their limbs twisted grotesquely. Some of the divers wearing lighter suits of stitched fabric, the mercenary sea dogs we call them, have been even less fortunate and ruptured their suits a number of times, causing a massive loss of pressure and an explosion of bubbles. We have found light suits crumpled on the bottom that appear to have no diver inside. The only remnant, a thin veneer of flesh and pulverized bone adhering to the inside of the helmet. Wormwood has not yet identified the solution to this unfortunate side effect of our underwater expeditions, but we have been able to bring more mercenaries hungry for golden treasures to replace the casualties. So far, the armored suits worn by the more experienced soldiers are able to withstand damage without collapsing. These suits have allowed much more freedom for the expedition and are good protection against most, but not all attacks from the wildlife. All in our expedition now carry crystal lamps down with them, but many close the shutters and would rather descend in total darkness than risk attracting the predators that prowl the deep. We have found that many of the largest predators, such as the crocodilian sea dragons, have excellent eyesight and are unrelenting in their attack once they follow a trail of light. Shutting off the lamps does not ensure safety, though, as some of our divers have been carried off by some hidden devil that we have not yet identified. The deep abyssal plains have solid rock on the bottom, covered with a layer of light-colored sediment, almost as if the bottom was covered with snow. A sample of the sediment appeared to be almost entirely composed of tiny shells and bones, more than likely the remains of countless creatures consumed by predators over the eons. There were also a multitude of strange-looking crystalline objects visible when examining the sediment samples under our new microscope, donated by the esteemed Dr. Hook for the expedition, and many appeared similar to snowflakes or symmetrical spheres and plates. It is possible that this crystalline snow falls continually from the waters above, as many of the wrecks seem to be dusted with this fine white sediment, as if they were outside on a cold winter's day. There is considerable volcanic activity in many places, with a number of thermal vents that spew boiling water from the bowels of the earth. Some resemble infernal chimneys, shooting up gouts of black water with the appearance of dense smoke. Surrounding the chimneys, or black towers as I have named them, are vast fields of indescribably foul sea life. There are enormous tube-like creatures that shoot out powerful jaws to drag the unwary diver down into their bellies. Crawling among them are massive crabs with pinchers that can pull off limbs or crush helmets. Swarms of smaller vermin, like marine versions of the land insects that roll into balls for defense, obscure one's view and can eat into the soft joints of our dive suits. These areas, while deadly to those that linger within for more than a few moments, are also abundant in precious metals such as gold, silver, copper, and platinum. Those that brave the toxic, acidic water around the Black Towers may well recover a veritable hoard of wealth, as well as many glowing crystals which appear to be some accreted form of argonite, illuminating the bottom like blue torches. These crystals channel the ethereal energy fields of this underground realm more powerfully than the crystals we recovered in the underlands, and have been most useful in powering our dive suits and other ancient artifacts. It is this treasure that is more valuable than gold or platinum. Exploring the sea floor. When finally landing on the bottom of either the shallow shelf or deep sea, explorers must carefully manage their ballast and pressure control, lest they float upwards and become separated from the team, lost in the emptiness above. This has been a cruel lesson to some of our new recruits. However, those that survive the first dive seem to learn quickly, and there have been fewer accidents during the most recent expedition. The dive suits are truly amazing devices, with their own internal air supply, temperature control, and power to help move quickly and efficiently. The ballast system pumps air into chambers throughout the suit and allows one to control the descent and ascent through the water column with ease. Wormwood recently discovered an artifact that may be some sort of rapid propulsion system held by the suit that could provide additional maneuverability. Experienced wearers of the dive suits have discovered that they can utilize the ballast control along with the propulsion system of multiple belt-driven fans to cruise for long distances, right over the seafloor. Energy for the suit is produced by a power plant on the back containing glowing ether crystals that use their magnetic properties to turn gears and pull levers. The energy from these crystals is drained at a rapid rate, and there is a constant need to recover more crystals to continue our expeditions.
Thanks, guys, for listening to today's tales. You can find our Indie Invasion podcast on all podcast platforms, including Podbean, Google, and iTunes. And please visit us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, and if you can, support us on Patreon/IndieInvasion. And feel free to email us with any questions or comments at indieinvasion@gmail.com. And remember, guys, don't forget to prepare yourself for the invasion.